one goal of the digital pill is to solve a big, expensive problem. That is, patients not taking their meds on time or at all. That costs taxpayers somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 billion to $289 billion a year in the U.S. alone. That estimate comes from the Annals of Internal Medicine in a 2012 report on patient compliance in medications for chronic diseases. This comes to mind because the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved this week the first drug in the U.S. with a digital ingestion tracking system. People are calling it the digital pill, and it could be the future of medicine. Arthur Kaplan is the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU School of Medicine. Arthur, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, a digital tracking system in a pill, what did you think of this when you heard the FDA announcement this week?
I knew it was coming. People have been talking about sort of surveillance pills for some time. Listeners may remember there was a technology before this, bottles that tracked when you opened them and took your pills out. They obviously couldn't tell if you swallowed that pill, but we have had kind of chipped pill containers to track what people are doing for a while. So this is the next natural extension of that notion that in order to get you to take your meds, we better keep an eye on whether you actually swallow them.
Abilify has been around for a long time treating psychotic disorders like schizophrenia. What do you think motivated Abilify to design a pill with a sensor in it, or how did this deal come together, this technology come together for Abilify?
Well, remember, that's a drug that's also used in people with early stage Alzheimer's. I think the idea was maybe these people are cognitively impaired, maybe they forget to take their medicine. Wouldn't it be great if we could make sure that they do? Although working with a group that may have cognitive problems, memory problems and so on, it means somebody else probably has to make sure you take your pill if you're trying to make sure that this happens, which gets into some issues about privacy and who in the family or which partner or who you live with is going to know that you are afflicted with, let's say, a mental disorder. So I'm pretty sure they went there because that's a group that is vulnerable to memory issues.
Explain for us exactly how this system works in the body.
Basically, you have a sensor for the chemical that the drug makes attached to the pill. Think of it as a little chip, and it sends a signal back to kind of registry or data collecting point. And so the doctor can see when you come in that you took your medicine, you know, every day, three times a day. I think of it as kind of an internal Fitbit for keeping track of where things have gone medically into your system.
Why? The FDA moves very carefully, quite slowly, some people say. Why do you think the FDA supports this sort of development, this sort of advancement?
Well, remember, the FDA, its job is not to decide whether this is worthwhile or ethical or cost-effective. Their job is to figure out, is it safe? And so far, there doesn't seem to be any safety issue with this. And does it work? And so far, the FDA seems to be convinced that, yes, you can track who took a pill. That's it. That is what their job is. They don't do anything more than that. They're not regulating to say, is this a good idea or a bad idea? If someone wants to get into that fight, it's going to be the payers. It's going to be the rest of us sort of bothering our elected officials. But FDA doesn't make the judgments about is it good. They just make the judgments about does it work.
So they're all about usability. But let's dig into this idea of privacy rights and ethical concerns. While using this digital pill is perhaps voluntary, unless it's a forceful conversation, perhaps with a physician, critics are concerned about things like privacy and this drug being used improperly. From your background, what do you think of this?
Well, I think there are some real concerns. One kind of amusing and odd one is that You know, and you used to go to the doctor before the doctor could figure out whether you really took your medicine. You had kind of a little bit of a dance in your conversation. The doctor said, you're taking your blood pressure medicines, and you would say, yes, I am, but you're thinking, well, not every day, or sometimes I miss it. Now you've got kind of the truth serum technology. The doctor's going to say, you are not taking your blood pressure medicines or whatever else this extends to. You're not taking the medicine I prescribed for you. And it's going to change doctor-patient relationships. That is to say, is the doctor then, as you hinted before, going to start yelling at you? Are we going to have doctors who say, if you don't take your medicine, I'm not going to be your doctor? We could certainly see a tougher line. And then remember, too, there are plenty of things that the doctor wants us to do that we don't do. Here's a technology that tells us facts about ourselves. It's called a scale. And they put you on it every time you go to the doctor, right? Well, when you're at the doctor and you say, I'm watching my diet and your weight doesn't go down, the doctor doesn't necessarily have the tricks or the knowledge about how to get you to diet or change your behavior. We're not great at that. So even knowing that you didn't take your pill, while helpful, doesn't really mean we know how to get you to do that. Forget about whether you're cognitively impaired. There's just a lot of people who, you know, have a lot of things to do and they don't take their meds, and we're not great at changing behavior yet. So I think, obviously, you can't get at this issue if people don't know that you're not taking your medicine, but it doesn't mean that we know how to get you to take your medicine.
Arthur Kaplan is with us. He is the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's School of Medicine. We're talking about a new digital pill. Abilify MyCeit came on the market this week, approved by the FDA on Monday. Arthur, what about court-ordered medication, especially in the vein of antipsychotic drugs, where courts say that this person has to be on them? Could this be a particular breakthrough on that front?
Absolutely, yes. I'll predict that at some point in the not-too-distant future, this technology will extend to many other kinds of medicines. And legally, some people are going to say, look, if you're not taking your anti-opioid medicine or your anti-alcohol medicine, then we're not going to let you go on parole. We're going to bring you back, or we're going to sentence you to jail time because you don't seem to be able to follow a court-ordered program, say, to take your medicine for tuberculosis, which is a threat to people, and oftentimes we have to supervise people taking their medicine by putting them in the hospital to watch that they do it. You can imagine many, many scenarios. Say a child with ADD and has got one of these chipped pills, digital pills, and people say, you can't really be admitted to this school unless we can see, as the school nurse, that you're taking your medicine all the time. So privacy issues are big. Issues around what authority does someone have to know about whether you're taking your medicine, whether it's a parole officer, a school nurse, another third party. Those issues are coming. They are inevitably going to arise. And I think some people will say, this is great. We know whether you're on your meds. And other people are going to say, I don't want a whole slew of other people knowing about what medicines I take.
I understand that in the clinical trials, the drug trials for this particular medicine, they don't know whether this would help with compliance. There isn't knowledge about whether this would even improve compliance. Should we know more about compliance before we put it out there?
Well, it's a great question. It's sort of coming back to the point I was trying to make about we can tell in healthcare that there are a lot of things that people should do that they don't do. We can weigh you at the doctor's office and see that you're not on your diet. We can see that you're not doing exercise because you're not in good shape. So there are lots of things we know. But we don't know how to get you to change your behavior. Compliance is a big problem out there. I don't know that we're going to wait to use this technology because it is an assist, and I'm not against that. But we have to do more in terms of where we spend money on research, what we try to study and understand to learn how to get people to modify their behavior, whether it's the right incentives or whether it's certain kinds of penalties, I don't know. But as odd as it sounds, just finding out that I know that you didn't take your medicine does not mean that I know what to say to you to get you to take your medicine.
We're discussing the ethics surrounding a medical advancement in the digital pill with Arthur Kaplan. He's founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's School of Medicine. Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to a digital pill? How do you feel if your physician prescribed you a digital pill for taking an antipsychotic medication? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after the news. Abilify MySight is expected to hit the market next year. The price has not yet been set. The FDA approved the drug this week that has a digital ingestion tracking system, the size of a grain of sand, they say, which can tell if a medication was ingested by a patient. The tablets are meant to allow easier treatment of schizophrenia, bipolar, and some depression. We're discussing this with Arthur Kaplan. He's the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's School of Medicine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned or encouraged about a digital pill on the market? Physicians, would you prescribe this pill to your patients? Why or why not? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Cheryl in Zephyr Hills, Florida. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how you doing today?
Doing well. Go ahead.
I would just like to know, you all say it's a digital pill, exactly what would happen after everything is dissolved, does that digital part stay in your body?
Yeah, and Arthur, what happens to this? Does it disintegrate, as Cheryl wonders? What happens to the digital aspect of this?
Well, it does disintegrate. There's no permanent presence once the pill is what they call metabolized or what we may think of as digested. But that doesn't mean that the future generation of these pills wouldn't put something into your body either voluntarily to keep monitoring what's going on, let's say, in your stomach, just in terms of your health, or to collect other information. And I might add, one abuse of this kind of technology is to put that in there without telling you. Obviously, you might slip something onto a pill and kind of use it like an ankle bracelet or a GPS monitor or something like that. It's pretty clear that we're going to need to update our legislation about privacy to start to reflect concerns that someone's watching, not just from outside, but someone's watching us from our insides.
Cheryl, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to David now in Ashland. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning. I have a couple of comments. As a psychiatrist, we've had medications that we've used as injectables for many years, and patients will either accept those injectables or sometimes, many times, will disappear and not come to the medical profession for help. In a big way, it's a change of how we view mental illness and being able to treat them both in a biological as well as a social, as well as a psychological treatment. Medications just don't do everything that we need them to do. And for people that are vulnerable, they are in need of many other things besides just a pill to solve their problem.
David, what was your reaction as a psychiatrist in seeing this news this week from the FDA on Abilify MySight?
I'm not surprised. It's a balance between what is beneficial for the individual and what's beneficial for the society. When we look at mental illness as a crime, then what we're going to be doing is we're going to be stacking the prisons with people with mental illness, and that's not going to be treating them or our culture in an appropriate manner.
Well, David, thanks so much for calling in. Let's get Arthur here to respond. These are vulnerable people, as David is saying here, and there have been injectables. We've seen what has happened. Mm-hmm. Arthur, what's your response there?
Yeah, I am concerned, too. I do think they're vulnerable. I think it's not a long step from this will help me monitor you to you have to take this, and we're going to have to watch the consent side of this. Some of these people can't consent. They're mentally impaired. Who else is going to be involved in giving them their medicines? Who else is going to know? By the way, we haven't said it, but is your insurance company going to start to say, you know what, I'm going to charge you more. You just don't take your medicines the way you're supposed to, so you're more expensive risk.
Arthur, this is not, or has it, you can let us know, but what about generics in this conversation? Abilify, MyCite, we haven't heard a price yet for this. Will there be generics on the way?
Not for a long time. The companies that are able to afford putting the technology into their medicines, Abilify, but others in the pipeline, or the big guys, I can imagine generics someday, but not first. I don't think this will in itself raise your price tremendously. It might actually save some money in terms of making sure that people do take their medicine appropriately. But again, as I said, if you're one of the people who falls by the wayside, you might find yourself getting penalized.
What about hacking? Should we be concerned that physicians need to now ensure data security with this technology?
Absolutely. So if there's any type of electronic messaging, whether it's your defibrillator, your pacemaker, a pill that's inside your body, a Fitbit or other type surveillance chip, again, there's a lot of information around out there that people could hack. You could even see people trying to give you a pill with a chip surreptitiously. So that they just want to know that they got it into you, whatever malicious purpose they might have. So I'm not against this technology. I think it will help deliver medicines more effectively, but it's got a slew of privacy, consent, and if you will, penalty issues in terms of the legal system that we really have to pay attention to.
Does this technology have a history of use in other countries? Can we look elsewhere around the world?
Nope, just brand new. We haven't seen that. I guess the closest we have is other countries sentencing people to having to be on medicines and not giving them any choice about it. But no, we don't have the digital pill anywhere else yet.
Describe how this could impact the fragile, sometimes sensitive relationship between a physician who really wants to see their patient improve and the patient who wants to retain some control in this relationship.
I think this may turn out to be one of the biggest areas of controversial impact of this technology. I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld, listeners watch Seinfeld, but there was a famous show where Elaine was trying to go to the doctor and she was labeled as difficult. It got in her notes. If you're the non-compliant pill taker and you move to another doctor and they pass along on their notes, you know, Art doesn't really take his pills properly. You have to manage him. And you're thinking, is this doctor going to accept me? I get labeled now as being a bad pill taker. So you can imagine some really interesting and almost in some ways amusing ways in which the technology really shifts around the doctor-patient relationship. I used to be in charge of reporting on what I was doing. Now a little digital pill is.
Do you see a timeline here for a digital pill following for chronic diseases, heart disease, and other diseases where people are on some very popular widespread medications, statins, for instance?
Absolutely. I'll give it 3 years. I know people like to talk in 10-year terms, but I think the ability to make sure that people take their diabetes medicine and what that would do to cost control and improved outcomes of health, blood pressure medicines, these chronic HIV medicines, taking them, making sure you fill your prescription, making sure you take your prescription, and by the way, making sure you take it in the right way, the number of doses per day you're supposed to take and so on, and the time you take it. There's a lot of bad behavior out there from a health policy point of view. There's money to be made, saving money to try and improve our bad compliance. So yes, I think we will be going in that direction. And I'm not against it again. It just needs an ethics infrastructure to supervise it to make sure that we don't give up our rights when we're swallowing our pills.
Arthur, fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Arthur Kaplan is the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's School of Medicine. Now let's continue this conversation about a digital pill on the market here in the U.S. with psychiatrist Peter Kramer. He is a clinical professor emeritus of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University, author of several books, including Ordinary Well, The Case for Antidepressants, and Listening to Prozac. Dr. Kramer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to ask you this very similar question. What was your reaction when you heard the FDA's announcement this week on Abilify MyCite, first digital pill?
So mixed. You know, the background is that this is a pill for the most horrible conditions human beings are subject to. You know, these mental illnesses where people are hearing hallucinations, they're delusional. It's a broad range of uses, but includes very serious conditions. The pills to treat this, we're lucky to have them. We've had them for 60 years, have a lot of side effects. And, you know, typically what happens if the medicine is at all right for the patient is on the medicine, the patient starts doing better. Often the patient will feel well enough that he stops, you know, he or she stops taking the medicine. And because these side effects are so onerous, the patient may feel better yet off the medicine, and that leads in a bad direction where the medicine recurs. Where the illness recurs. So that's the reason for these medicines. On the other hand, you know, we really don't know what we're getting into, and I can see scenarios where these medicines would actually decrease compliance instead of increasing it because people feel spied on, and you know, when the next episode comes around, having felt kind of coerced on the medicine, they don't consult the doctor at all, that it interferes with the doctor-patient relationship. So I think we just don't know overall what the, you know, good side and problems of these medicines is going to be.
Do you see a need for a clinical trial on compliance with this type of medication to see exactly whether it improves compliance?
Right. There are two levels. The simple question is, does it improve compliance in the person right in front of you? So that's one question. And this really hasn't been done. My understanding is that the way this device was tested was that researchers gathered people who were doing well on their current medication, whatever it was, and they gave them this dummy pill. In other words, they gave them an additional pill that had no active ingredient but had the signaling capacity. So they were just taking pills that did nothing and saw, you know, how they did, what it was like, whether they would stay on the pill that gave the radio signal better than they'd stay on another dummy pill that didn't give the signal. And that's fine, but you're not seeing the pill in action with all its side effects. So we really don't know. But that's only one question. Then, as I said, the other question is, once you've done that, what happens with the next episode of illness? Does this change in the doctor-patient relationship make people more or less likely to show up quickly when things go wrong?
And a psychiatrist, David, just called in from Ashland saying, you know, these are vulnerable patients sometimes. If they know that they are being forced to do something, you might not see them again. Are you concerned about that, that they will return to the next appointment, the next visit?
Right. So that, you know, that is my concern. I think it's kind of easy to test whether, you know, someone takes 20 pills in a row, but whether, as I say, someone shows up not just for the next visit in that series of visits, but shows up for the following series of visits as they're needed. Now, you know, I think you can see ideal or horror scenarios, you know, in either direction. That is, you can imagine this is a technology that allows for really good, detailed conversations between doctor and patient. They both have the same information. The patient wants the doctor to have the information, you know, or maybe the parents or a sibling, whoever is helping monitor this person. But you can also, as I say, imagine a situation where the patient is a little paranoid already, becomes more paranoid as something in his body is reporting to others about him.
Why this medication? Why an antipsychotic for putting... This sensor probably could have been put in other types of medications, perhaps, but why this?
No, I think psychiatrists as a group, it's been interesting because, you know, this is sort of a heralded advance. On the other hand, if you go online, you see lots of psychiatrists expressing worries about it. I think we as a group wish some other medicine had come first. This is where we don't want to be in the vanguard. Think about tuberculosis. We have multi-drug resistant tuberculosis where you have to take, you know, two or three medicines to interrupt the infection, and they may not work. It's really important that people stay on their medicine. If you had pioneered this technology for tuberculosis, so both the patient and the doctor know that every pill is being taken so we don't develop more resistant strains, you know, and in a condition where there's a limit to how long you have to take it, so that you take a certain number of pills on a certain schedule, I think that, as the pioneering effort, would have been welcomed by everyone. This is more problematic to start with patients who are vulnerable, as your correspondent said, and possibly delusional, and where questions of competency to give consent come into play. And then there, you know, because of the kind of illnesses these are, the courts often get involved. So you can imagine now a court mandating that a person be on this medicine. And I think being required to take the medicine may be a good thing, may prevent, you know, all kinds of self-destructive or destructive behavior. But the notion that the court can go right into your body and send signals out to the rest of the world is a little bit creepy.
So the Abilify, as you mentioned, has been around for a long, long time. Some reports say about 7 million people in the U.S. have taken it since its launch 15 years ago. How effective is it for managing mental illnesses? You mentioned lots of side effects.
Right. So the class of drugs that Abilify is in, it's a little hard to say which class, but if we think about medicines called antipsychotics or neuroleptics, they are really the earliest of the modern psychotherapeutic drugs to be developed in the 1950s, so they've been around a long while. And they have lots of side effects, and I think for some patients, Abilify is the best of a bad lot. It has, you know, a better side effect profile than some of the others, which is why it's so popular. It's also popular because it has other uses. It's used adjunctively, that is, as an add-on pill in depression. You know, as I say, it's popular because it's, you know, probably has a somewhat more benign side effect profile, but people really can feel damped down. They can get more impulsive. They can gain weight. Commonly, they do gain weight. There are problems with diabetes and pre-diabetic syndromes. So these are not harmless pills, but they're popular because they serve a function.
We're discussing the ramifications of having an embedded sensor option in an antipsychotic drug used for treating schizophrenia and bipolar. Your chance to get in on the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you see ethical issues here? Do you see a medical breakthrough here? What questions do you have about a digital pill? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after the latest news. Here's how the digital pill works. The sensor in the medication is about the size of a grain of sand. It's activated when it comes into contact with stomach acids The sensor detects and records the date and time the pill is taken. Then the sensor transmits that information to a patch worn by the patient. The patch then sends the data to a smartphone app. At that point, the data can then be shared with selected family members or caregivers. Psychiatrist Peter Kramer stays with us. He's a clinical professor emeritus of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University, author of several books, including Ordinary Well, The Case for Antidepressants. You can join in as well at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dee in Milwaukee. Hi, Dee.
Hi. I found that personally experiencing two children who had bipolar, we have it. It's not so much whether or not they're taking the pill, as more are they getting the right combination of medication? Is the medication working correctly? I had one daughter that had a psychiatrist that just kept piling medication on top of medication, and she finally refused to take it, ended up in the hospital, and was finally put on a medication that works, and it's like two pills a day instead of 12.
Right.
My other son kept telling a psychiatrist the medication isn't working and ultimately committed suicide. So it's all about the doctor, the right combination of medication, not digitally, are they taking it or not?
Dr. Kramer.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. I'm so sorry for that story. Expertise and a good relationship with the patient are still going to be the core of treatment for serious disorders like this. And, I think one reason doctors are uneasy about this as the first use of a digital pill is that, this not taking the medicine is called non-compliance, non-adherence. But often the reason people are stopping medicine is that the medicine isn't working. The side effects are intolerable. There's some combination of medicines that's hard to take. So they're not taking it because the disease is getting worse and they're failing to keep up with what they need to be well, but they're actually stopping the medicine for some considered reason. So I think that it's just that these diseases and the treatments for them are so complex, it's not clear this is really the right place to start. I mean, that said, I went online to the manufacturer's website, and they claim that they're going to start with a limited number of doctors and be very selective about which patients are enrolled, and maybe that they will learn how to use this technology well. We'll see.
Dee, thank you so much for calling in with your insights. We appreciate it. Let's go to another Dee in Pewaukee. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi there. Yeah, at first, I was concerned. I work with a lot of psych patients, and I'm in the medical field, and I think this will be positive in a sense that there are people who want to get better and who want to show the doctors that they are being compliant. And exactly what the previous woman stated, previous D, sometimes, you're trying to tell the doctor there are side effects, it's not working, I'm taking my medication. And you're on your own if the doctors either don't believe you or whatever. And I think this could be turned in that it could be positive for the patient.
Right. I mean, as a doctor, would I like to have this information a lot of the time? Yes. I have a patient, say, who comes in and says, my medicine isn't working as well as it used to. And I say, well, have you actually been taking it? And she says, yeah, I may have missed a couple of doses, but I've been pretty reliable. And then if I have this digital record, I can say, gee, it seems like you missed maybe more doses than you realized. And let's try a little more in the next week and then get back to me, or 2 weeks, whatever it is. And that sort of stays my hand. I'm not raising the dose. I'm not adding a second medicine. So I think with a good doctor-patient relationship, this could be very useful.
Because you have really sound data, and data helps figure out what is the next step.
And by the way, this is coming. I mean, we're discussing what I think is a complicated illness, set of illnesses, complicated drugs. But you can imagine that in a few years, you'll take all your medicines this way. You know, if you have incipient dementia as you get older, you won't wonder, did I really take my pills today? Forget communicating with a third party. You know, you'll know yourself. And I manage the care of an aging, forgetful relative at some distance, you know, not long ago. And I would love to have known, you know, and he would have loved for me to have known whether he'd taken his medicines on a given day. So that, you know, it's not necessarily the doctor who's getting the information, but some caring relative may be collaborating with the patient.
Dee, thank you so much for calling in. Let's now go to Alex in Black River Falls. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm actually worried about the environmental effects of these. I remember when there was microbeads in soap and they all end up in the Great Lakes. And I think of all the studies we hear about antidepressants ending up in the Great Lakes and in fish. If they start putting a transmitter in every single pill that Americans take, that's billions of pills. What happens to all those transmitters?
I mean, I don't know what this is like as a transmitter. It's been described sort of as, you know, like a potato battery, that it's a combination of metals like magnesium and copper, which we have in our diet anyway, and they're just arrayed in a way that when the acid hits them, they give a little signal, and it's really the patch on the skin that is interpreting it. So I'm not sure, you know, that could be a consideration. It could be that what is going into the Great Lakes is going to be very similar to what goes into the Great Lakes when you take dietary supplements.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for that consideration, for calling in. Dr. Kramer, you mentioned this before, but where do you see this medication heading in the management of chronic diseases, in the management of so many diseases that are taken by many people?
Right. You know, this is a chronic disease, and I think I made the case with tuberculosis that a time-limited use of these sensors might be especially appropriate, but I think it's also true with chronic diseases. It's very hard to take a pill, and certainly a number of pills every day. And I think maybe in the way I just mentioned with that conversation with the patient, that the doctor-patient relationship really will be improved by having this monitoring. On the other hand, you know, as doctors, we're very worried about the whole face of medicine and how many intermediaries there are between doctors and patients. So you can imagine that the data here might be handled by third parties and summarized for doctors and brought to their attention. You can imagine that there's sort of a corporate cast given to medicine as we get more and more technological. So it's hard to tell whether this will be good for intimate doctor-patient relationships or whether it will give rise to some supervening technology that will stand between doctors and patients.
Let's go to Madeline now in De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. I was diagnosed with major clinical depression quite a few years ago. And at one point I was put on Abilify along with my other depression medication. And I eventually discovered that I didn't need any of those drugs. I had found out about the importance of vitamin D, so I started taking 2,000 IUs of vitamin D every day, and then I heard about the importance of gut balance, and that's the brain-gut connection, so I started taking a good probiotic, and the importance of magnesium. And but anyway, I was afraid to give it up, the medications up. But then I got to the point where the Abilify caused that I couldn't hold my feet still.
Dr. Kramer, go ahead.
No, I mean, that is a terrible side effect of these medicines. It's called akathisia, and people feel they have to be in constant motion. You know, I've written two books on the sorts of issues that came up in this comment. One is called Against Depression, which is about how we see depression altogether, and the other is this newer one, Ordinarily Well, about antidepressants. And I think, you know, yes, there are lots of thoughts about non-technical solutions for depression, exercise, diet, gut biome, and so on. they are not well proven. I think it's very important to interrupt depression, stop it. It's a highly recurrent illness. It gets worse with subsequent episodes. And I think if something informal is working for you, good. But the real test of a treatment for depression is that it works. And the well-tested treatments are psychotherapy and medication. So, you know, I think it's just important to interrupt these episodes. And, you know, if you're lucky, you'll get a long or maybe indefinite good period, you know, where you can be off medication and out of psychotherapy as well.
Madeline, thanks for calling in. Dr. Kramer, in the minute or so left we have with you, what are you watching for now? As we've heard this announcement this week from the FDA, this digital pill coming on the market, what are you watching for next?
You know, I'm worried that we're just shuffling around board pieces and that this is a way of, lengthening patents on a medicine that's otherwise off patent. We really are looking for breakthrough drugs in the treatment of mental illness. We're looking for drugs that work on new principles. And because of lots of controversies in mental health, because the treatments we have are fairly good and hard to compete with, drug companies have really stopped investing in innovative treatments for mental illness. What I'm really hoping for is more investment, more research, and, we need drugs that just work better all together.
And so Abilify, this lengthens its patent then, you say?
Well, it went off patent.
Okay.
The new device, you know, will only be made by the companies that are making it for a period of time, yes. So, you know, they get a new sort of mini monopoly for this treatment. And as I say, there may be situations like court cases and so on where the treatment is mandated, so there may be quite a premium in terms of price.
Well, Dr. Kramer, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Psychiatrist Peter Kramer is a clinical professor emeritus of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University, author of several books, including Ordinary Well, The Case for Antidepressants, and Listening to Prozac. Earlier in the hour, we spoke with Arthur Kaplan, the founding head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's School of Medicine, about the digital pill. We can continue this conversation on the digital pill announced this week by the FDA over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.